the point of this is to provide the best facts-driven show that we possibly can.
Ideally, you have a glue guy who is good.
Hashtag glue guy, hashtag locker room guy. You can't go sign Bobby Holik to $1 trillion. You can't do these things.
Very satisfying.
The absolute best NYR show in town.
This is the Liberty Blue. Rangers Podcast. With Andrew Shelby. And Nick Zeraris.
Welcome to Liberty Blue, the essential New York Rangers podcast. I'm Andrew Chelney alongside Nick Zeraris. And Nick, well, they beat Seattle. They looked atrocious against Vegas. They couldn't score against David Riddick and LA. And they needed Will Cooley to be the hero in Anaheim. What a strange team this is right now.
I was thinking about this a lot this morning. I was making my breakfast and I was trying to think about how I wanted to phrase what I would describe the last week as. And I think something we in particular are guilty of occasionally is we look at each game as an individual entity as opposed to being interconnected. And I think a lot of that is rooted in how we view games, as you know, there's 82 of them, as opposed to little interconnected components from each other where we can't quantify or materialize what like the value of momentum and confidence are, but we can tell the Rangers aren't a confident hockey team right now. I mean, it's like you said, it took Will Cooley saving their asses last night, scoring that goal and then drawing that penalty where they subsequently scored on the power play they got. But right now it feels like every single mistake they make is going to end up in the back of their net. And when it's going bad like that, it takes somebody looking around and saying, all right, we can't do this. We can't keep playing like this. If we keep playing like this, we are going to piss away everything we've built so far this season. It's bizarre that it had to be a child on a team full of guys who have been in the league a long time saying, okay, we're not getting anything going. I'm going to the net. I am going to stay in front of the net until they move me from the front of the net. Sometimes it is that simple as saying, get out of my way. It really is that simple sometimes. So good on Cooley for rising to the occasion. But if we're waiting for guys like Will Cooley, Jimmy Vesey, Blake Wheeler, Tyler Pitt, like Nick Bonino, Barkley Goodrow to save us here, you know, there's not really a point in doing the rest of this season. If we are playing this way where Shesterkin hasn't been himself and the top guys aren't scoring consistently, this team is flopped. This team is cooked. It's that simple. If Shesterkin's this bad, it doesn't matter if the power play and the top six play well. If Shesterkin is average or below average, this team has no chance of doing anything significant.
Well, also the transition defense has been atrocious. Like if you watched, especially the second Anaheim goal and even the goal that was disallowed, that third goal that was offside, the Rangers had guys back and then they had nobody back. Like it was such a, it's been an ongoing issue the last few weeks now where the Rangers have had guys back or, you know, have had numbers or what have you. And then the other team just comes in and just kind of waltzes in and not only creates the first chance, gets the rebound, crashes the net, gets their third and fourth chance before somebody else gets back on defense. By that time, the puck is in the back of the net. It's very like this hasn't happened earlier on in the season. So that's one of the question marks heading into this next week here is what is happening now to the transition defense that hasn't been a problem before. We usually when the Rangers are back, somebody gets somebody, there's sticks tied up. And if there's one opportunity, there's not a second one or a third one or a fourth one. These past few weeks, that hasn't really been the case. And I'm not so sure what's leading to that breakdown in coverage.
So I think part of that is what we were just talking about. It's tied to confidence, knowing what you need to do when you need to do it. And when you are mired in a slump like they very much are, everything that can go wrong is going to go wrong, and you are going to start to overthink. You are going to be gripping your stick a smidge too tight. You are going to start pinching a second too late or a second too soon and leaving yourself vulnerable to those types of rush attempts. We talked about this last week, the idea that the Rangers are the guy who quit the gym the third week of January when it was their New Year's resolution. And to some degree, I do think that's the case. I think everybody got pretty comfortable with how they were playing through December, where even in mid-December, they weren't playing amazing, but they kept winning. So it was a little more bearable to overlook some of the mistakes, some of the flaws with this team. And now that they have kind of fully come to who they are, they've regressed to who they are as a team talent-wise, it is very easy to say it's effort, it's commitment. You're right. These are guys who know better. These are seasoned professionals here. Even Braden Schneider at this point, you know, this is his third season in the league. He should be a little bit further along in his decision-making and understanding when he needs to go and when he needs to stay. But same thing with Lindgren, same thing with Trouba. The only defenseman who's playing well right now is Adam Fox, and that's it. Keandre Miller's had a rough 2 weeks. Trouba and Miller together just, I do not understand why something put together by David Quinn has lasted this long. David Quinn is not even good hockey coach. Okay. I do not understand why these two play together. And my one additional caveat, something I want to add on to that as an addendum, it's great. Everybody on the team likes who they play with, that they like who's on the leadership committee. But if they don't actually have a good result, like, it's great. Everybody's friends. Everybody likes each other. But if they don't play well together, they shouldn't stay together. I know Miller says, well, Trouba taught me a lot about what it meant to be a pro, that kind of thing. That's great. That doesn't actually translate to hockey, which has been the issue here, that those two played together, I want to say the third or fourth most of any defensive pair in all of hockey last year, and they still do not communicate effectively. We have been talking about this for 2 years now, where these are guys who know better and they don't do it. That's the undercurrent of the last month of Rangers hockey. A lot of these mistakes are guys who know better. It's Zibanejad overpassing, Kreider overpassing. It's Trouba Miller pinching too early or too late. It's the Lafreniere, Trocheck, Panarin line, which I resent. I don't want to critique because they're the only line keeping this team afloat, but they're atrocious defensively. We all know that, and we accept that as part of the offense. But at some point, one of these adults in this room has got to say, hey, man, we're losing because of details, and that's correctable stuff. And if you keep making the same mistakes over and over again, you are what you are at that point. Like we said last week, the Rangers aren't who they were last year, but all it takes is 2 bad weeks to go back to being who they were last year.
It's really kind of head scratching to see that Miller Trouba they continue to play poorly. They have been playing poorly for this is not a recent thing.
Yeah,
Trouba Miller have been bad as a pair for years now. Like, they had a really good first couple of months of the season, but now they've gone back to who they have been in years past. So if you're a head coach of the NHL and you're willing to put offensive lines in a blender after a while, Laviolette did that a little bit against Anaheim. Like, things just weren't working, and he tried to mix things up, and it led to Will Cooley being the hero and essentially leading the team to a win. But like, if you're a head coach and you're so willing to do that to the offense, why are you so reluctant to at least try something different defensively? That's the one thing that David Quinn didn't do, Gerard Gallant didn't do, and now Laviolette isn't really doing a whole lot of it either. If 79-8 as a pair, I don't care how much they're playing together, I don't care how much they know each other, I don't care about, you know, maybe Keandre Miller knows about how many moles are on Trouba's hand. Like, that doesn't matter to me. They aren't playing well together on the ice. What is it going to take for Pierre Laviolette to change the defensive pairs, at least for a period, a game, just to see how it goes? If it doesn't work, you could always go back to what it is. Like, it's January 22nd right now. This is the time for experimentation. This is the time to see, hey, Fox and Miller, go at it. Here's a game. Let's just see how it goes, and we'll take it from there. And if it's really that bad, okay, well, then just go back to what it was. Like, if you're so willing to experiment offensively, why? This is the third head coach in the row now for the Rangers that just refuses to try anything different defensively, and that doesn't make any sense to me.
The Rangers overvalue comfort. I am wholly committed to that. They don't break up Kreider, Zibanejad, they don't break up Trouba, Miller, because the guys on the team don't want them to, which, you know, at the end of the day, it's the coach's job to coach. And some of that is managing personalities and what guys want. But if something is actively holding the team back, something is actively hindering the team's ability to succeed, I don't care that you're best friends. At the end of the day, our job is to win here. This is professional sports. While you were talking, I went and looked it up. Since the start of the new year, Trouba and Miller have been on the ice for 10 goals against at 5-on-5, 5 goals for at 5-on-5. They have been on the ice for a third of goal share. So they are actively getting caved in. And I know someone will say, well, what's the save? 885 save percentage. Yes, we all know the Rangers goaltending is not in a good place right now. We all know that. We all understand that. We all agree that's part of why we should take some of these underlying results defensively with a grain of salt. It's hard to be effective defensively. But my counterpoint to that would be, you know, your goalie is struggling. You need to play better. I know the Rangers are doing an okay job at 5-on-5 the last month. When you go and look at the underlyings, they don't look bad. But my counterpoint to that is also, they got their shit pushed in more than once in the last month. When you are losing games 5-1, 6-2, the way they have this month, the underlyings are going to look okay, because once that other team gets up 4-2, they're not trying to score all that much. They're perfectly content with letting you cycle from the outside, shoot a bunch of pucks on net that aren't a particularly dangerous threat to go in. And it's not quite an inflection point of the season yet, because they've built up so much. They've built up enough leeway where they're not in any real danger right now. But the Flyers are one game behind them in the standings. They have three games until the All-Star break. My internal goal here is, don't go limping into the All-Star break. You have winnable games this week. You are playing San Jose on Tuesday, and you are playing Ottawa on Saturday. You lose to Vegas on Friday, fine, whatever. San Jose and Ottawa, those are two opportunities for a get-right game.
And Ottawa beat them the last time.
You mentioned that David Riddick kind of befuddled the Rangers on Saturday. The Kings had lost 9 out of 10 going into that game Saturday night. And they saw the Rangers as an opportunity to, we're going to dumb this game down. We are going to limit the scoring chances. And we think we can play better defense than you. And that was the difference on Saturday. Yeah, the Rangers had some good looks. They are very much so could have won that game, but they didn't. It is frustrating to say, but eventually you need to start getting results. And right now the team is not getting those results.
It's just a confusing team right now. And I know one of the things that I saw somebody highlight yesterday was, oh, well, Kreider came out of the box, and instead of just going for the breakaway, he slowed down and he tried to pass it. And like, that's a reflection on the team the past 2 weeks. No, it's not. That's a reflection of the team the past 5 years. That's because they love doing that. They absolutely love nothing else than to pass it 75 times to each other, as opposed to just taking the best opportunity presented to themselves. Like, and now I understand. Kreider later on had another breakaway, or at least kind of a half breakaway, got a shot off and it was stopped, and then the rebound went in. But like, the Rangers love nothing more than to do hot potato in the offensive zone. They love that stuff. That is their favorite pastime more than anything else when they play the sport. And it baffles me every single time they do it. Like, I'm sure that David Quinn, listen, for all the negatives that we associate with him, I'm sure he at some point was like, hey guys, you got to shoot the puck if you want to win the game. I'm sure Gerard Gallant, for as much as we admire him and for all of his mistakes, I'm sure at some point he's told his best players, if you don't shoot the puck, you're not going to score, you're not going to win games. And now Peter Laviolette, I would have to imagine, is saying the same thing. Like, these players are who they are. And these mistakes are all mental. Like, these are things that the players have to fix. This is the third head coach now with the same problems. At a certain point, the players have to look at the tape and go, oh yeah, you know, if I just don't pass it for the ninth time here and just shoot it on net, maybe it careens off a leg, it goes in the back of the net. But no, I try to force it through six people, and the puck was deflected, and it went the other way. What a surprise. Like, this is up to the players at this point to fix their problems, because everyone knows who they are, except for the players on the ice, which doesn't make any sense to me.
The Rangers are frustrating because they have talent to be better than they are playing right now. Yep. We understand they're shorthanded. We understand they didn't expect to have to play Brodzinski and Tyler Pitlick this much this season. but it's the guys you expect to know better. It is Zibanejad. It is Kreider. It is, to some extent, Trocheck and Panarin when it comes to defense. You expect those guys to be a little bit better. And I'm not going to get on Trocheck and Panarin for their defense as much because they're still scoring enough where they are actively carrying the team. As far as what we're talking about here, this idea, the Rangers have been very comfortable for quite a while now. This has been their team. These guys are all very entrenched in their roles. Zibanejad, Kreider, Trouba, guys who are effectively bulletproof. We talked about this last year in regards to guys like Gaudreau, guys like Jimmy Vesey, who are a little bit lower down in the lineup, being immune to critique, being immune to coach discipline, where, you know, they miss a shift here and there for messing up, that kind of thing. I do think there is something to that, that when you have an extremely established team, a lot of guys who aren't getting pushed internally because the organization knows these are their guys, that they get comfortable and that they are inclined to fall back on what they know best, which is what we've seen the last 2 weeks. The Rangers are making really bad decisions. They are falling into old habits because they are uncomfortable, because they are mired in a funk. They fall back onto what they know when they are in a funk, and that's what we've seen over the last 2 weeks. Like you said, that first 2 months of the season, the team defense was actively good, genuinely shutting teams down, not conceding offense, but now it's just non-existent. The decision-making is non-existent. The amount of times per game you see a defenseman step up to throw a hit, not get the puck, the person goes around them, and the play continues with the other team having a numbers advantage because you pinched at the wrong moment. And that is decision-making. That is correctable, but it is not being corrected.
And that, and again, I'm sure at film sessions, the coaching staff is beside themselves, like, because it's the same problems. It's not as if you fix one problem and there's just a new one magically appears. This has been an ongoing issue for the team for a long time now, and they fix it for the first 2 months, and now we're back to status quo, back to what happened, you know, how they play before Laviolette. I'm sure the coaching staff is just as upset about it as we are. Like, this is something that is so, if you just forget about the analytics for a second, just watch the game. This, like, these are problems that are so obvious to even the most casual viewer that I'm sure, like, this has been highlighted, I'm sure, across multiple film sessions. And the fact that these problems that should be correctable and should be at least worked on are kind of staying the same is a problem. Like, these are issues that you would think, these are pro players. They know if they make a mistake, how to go about it the right way next time and all these things. And yet we're still seeing a lot of the same mistakes, a lot of the, hey, I'm going to pinch at the blue line and deliver a big hit, even though that creates a 2-on-1 the other way because I like to hit people, I guess. I don't know. Just like strange decisions that cause poor, you know, timings the other way, cause goals against and cause chances against. They continue to happen despite, I'm sure, everybody understanding that they shouldn't do them. And at a certain point, like the Laviolette and Dan Muse and Michael Pekka and all those guys, they can only highlight mistakes so many times. Like, it's really up to everybody else to go out there and skate and not do them. Laviolette's not skating during the game. Like, as much as, I mean, I know he used to play, as much as I'm sure, you know, he would love to play again, he's not the one playing during the game. He's not the one, you know, making these mistakes. It's up to the players, and they have to fix it, because it's just, it's egregious at this point. The fact that they just keep doing the same mistakes and nothing's getting changed.
This is something we talked about a lot in the summer, this idea of whoever was coming in here was going to have an uphill battle, because two different coaches have come to the same exact inflection points where when it's come time for the best players on the team to be responsible, to adjust how they're playing, to adapt to the game, they refuse to do it. And at a certain point, that becomes a irrevocable something you can't fix. At a certain point, these are who they are. We talked about who are you going to get to come in here to get four, including Trocheck now, guys over the age of 30 to fundamentally alter how they're playing. They have gotten great results. Results better than I possibly ever conceived from Panarin and Trocheck playing together. Remember, coming into the year, you and I and pretty much everybody was in agreement that needed to be Hedl's spot because Hedl was going to be dynamic in a way that Trocheck just physically isn't capable of being. Trocheck has been a point per game player this year. I have no complaints about him and Panarin, even if the defense does leave you a little to be desired. Lafreniere is doing his job. He is not great defensively. He's skating better. He's more engaged. He's a better playmaker. If the kid could buy a goal, he'd have at least 5 to 6 more. He is one of the most unlucky finishers I've ever seen. At a certain point, maybe this is just who he is. But I need more from Kreider and Zibanejad at 5-on-5. And don't give me the, well, they play the other team's best competition. At some point, if you're the best player on your team, you have to be able to rise to the occasion and more than just tread water, you know. I know a lot of guys will look at, you know, well, when they play other great teams, you know, he's out there against Austin Matthews. He's out there against Nathan MacKinnon. Yeah, and he doesn't do a good job against those guys because those guys are on another tier of player than him. And that's not a knock on Zibanejad. We can, I'll give you a perfect analogy. So we just watched the Bills lose to the Chiefs again. Josh Allen is genuinely great. Josh Allen is probably the second best quarterback in football. He's not better than Mahomes. At the end of the day, nobody's better than Mahomes. There aren't a lot of guys better in this league, better than Matthews, MacKinnon, McDavid, you know? And if this is who you're bringing to the dance, if you want to go into the playoffs with Zibanejad, Kreider, those, and Panarin as your 1-2-3, you more likely than not are going to have an uphill battle because when you put that against Toronto's 1-2-3, Edmonton's, Colorado's, Vegas, Dallas, you put it against the other best teams in the league's 1-2-3, it's just not as good. And that means other guys in the lineup are going to have to pick up the slack. And we know the Rangers aren't equipped to have the rest of the lineup pick up the slack.
This has just been an ongoing battle with me and Kreider and Zibanejad. They had a good third period yesterday. Zibanejad with that nice long pass to Kreider, who got that goal on the rebound. But overall, your best guys need to be your best guys on almost a nightly basis. You can't have one line producing all of your offense. You just can't do it. And it, for on top of you can't, you know, have just one line doing all of your offense. That's not your best line. Supposedly, Kreider Zibanejad is your best line. So where are they? You can make the argument, okay, well, they need a better right winger, and Kaapo Kakko isn't it offensively. If you want to make that argument, I'm not here to necessarily agree with you on that, because Kaapo Kakko has been really good as a complimentary player to those guys, but like they just disappear for long stretches of the game. They are passengers a lot of the time. And that's my biggest gripe with those two, is they have the talent. We've seen it in the past where they will take over games offensively when they want to, when they feel like they need to, and they just don't do it. And I don't understand why they don't. They have the ability. It's not like, you know, we're looking at Pitlick and be like, oh, why isn't he take over the games? You know, like because he can't. Chris Kreider and Mika Zibanejad can, but they choose not to for most of the season at 5-on-5. And that just makes me so infuriated, because it's like, what, you have so much talent that you just don't use for the majority of the game. Why? Why?
So what I'll say in response to that, and it's definitely a sentiment I share as well, that you need more from those guys at 5-on-5. I think my big gripe with those two guys is, and you alluded to this, that there are games where, based on how the other team's defense operates, they can be rendered wholly ineffective. If you take away that Rainbow Road pass, that cross seam pass, or you force them to forecheck instead of giving them rush opportunities, they entirely disappear. And that is a style issue. That is something we've highlighted as far as the playoffs, as why you're a little skeptical of this Rangers team in the postseason, because when there's less space and you don't get those rush opportunities as often, you're going to have to forecheck, you're going to have to cycle, and you're really going to have to work for your offense. And Zibanejad doesn't take the puck to the net. Kreider only takes the puck to the net on breakaways. If Kreider doesn't engage the puck into the zone, if he is not the one that carries the puck into the zone, unless he's winning a board battle, he's not really doing anything. He really struggles in the interplay elements of the game because he doesn't have great puck skills. He's really fast in a straight line. He's big as a fridge. He's strong as an ox, but he doesn't have an elite shot.
Can we get that on a shirt, please?
What?
He's big as a fridge and strong as an ox.
I mean, he's the meat market. We know this. Word to Adam Fox. We know Chris Kreider is the meat market. But you want a guy like that. And this has always been how I felt about Kreider. Even during the 50-goal season 2 years ago, a lot of that was deflections. And yes, they all count the same at the end of the day. But there is a reason it's taken till Kreider's, 32 years old to get the best hockey of his life out of him, because he plays a very specific style. And if you don't situate him to complement that, you are not going to get the best results you possibly can. The talent has been there. It's always been there. We've seen it since his first game in the NHL in that playoff series against Ottawa. The speed and the size have always been there. But his unwillingness to engage using his size has always held him back from getting to that next tier that we all know he's capable of being, and that's a lot of the frustration.
I'm getting kind of sick and tired of Mika Zibanejad, and it's tough for me to say that because, again, we know the amount of skill that he has. We know, the speed and the puck skills that he has, especially, as I highlighted earlier, that long pass to Kreider off the boards, just a really smart play. I'm really sick of Mika Zibanejad because a lot of times he chooses not to do that. He chooses to be a passenger. Like, if you're supposed to be the best center on a team, if you're supposed to be the $8.5 million player that the Rangers think you are, I want to see more of that at 5-on-5. Like we talked about it during the off season. We talked about it last year. We're talking about it now. It's like Mika Zibanejad can't just be a better version of Mike Hoffman. He can't. This is
Andrew,
so
you got to come up with a better comparison.
But like,
that's
what he is. A lot of the times, that's what he is. It's really frustrating. Relax. It's very frustrating how he can be such a dynamic player when the Rangers have an extra skater on the ice, but when there's five guys on each side, he is doing cardio sometimes. And it's just, it bothers me because he's such a good player that can do so much more, but he either chooses not to or can't, or I don't know, but we know he can do it. We've seen him do it. And yet he's not doing it for a while now. He has stretches where he'll score like six goals in four games or whatever, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, the elite Zibanejad's back. This is who he is. And then he'll go another the next 3 weeks without doing much of anything at 5-on-5 again. It's just the Rangers need more out of him, and I don't know when that'll happen.
I think Ke'Andre Miller, I think there's a few guys on this team where once they get in their own head, they're screwed for at least a week. At least a week where they're just going to be wholly ineffective because of the way they operate. Zibanejad is an extremely confidence-based guy. When he was on that nuclear hot heater in the spring of 2020, where he had like the 15 goals in 10 games, where he genuinely looked like one of the 15, 20 best players in the world, he was taking the puck to the net, putting his head down, deking goalies out of their jocks, and genuinely looking dominant. When he is feeling his game, is incredible. Almost impossible to stop. Same thing with Ke'Andre Miller. When Miller is feeling his game, it's so effortless. He dispossesses guys of the puck. He can skate the puck anywhere. He can pass the puck anywhere. When he's struggling, he looks like he's never played professional. He's never played organized hockey, not even professional, where the mistakes are just mind-numbing and they are incredibly frustrating. And yes, we are saying all of this against as the backdrop of a team that is in first place in its division that has been over 700 points percentage the entire season. We understand that. They are also 10-10-1 over their last 20 games and are showing real, genuine backslide traits here. This is not just a rough patch. There is a real possibility that this is a genuine backslide. You know, I'm not going to compare it to the Sabres teams of 2 and 3 years ago that came out of the gate nuclear hot and then came back down to earth. But the Rangers are in a real fragile spot here, where if they don't start getting these guys in more comfortable positions, that's not to say this can't change, this can't improve, there's plenty of time left, but there are real genuine, not just like individual player concerns, but like philosophical organizational concerns if what's gone on the last few weeks continues, because this is the team. We talked about this all of last year. Once they gave Trocheck that extension, this is the team. There is no fundamentally altering anything about this group. Kreider, Zibanejad, Panarin, Trocheck, those are their guys. You can put Fox and Shesterkin in there too. Those are your five guys who make up more than half of your salary cap. You cannot get rid of any of those guys. And we throw Trouba in there for money reasons, but you can't get rid of any of these guys. You have to find a way to get more out of these guys so your supporting cast doesn't have to be perfect, because we know the Rangers' supporting cast isn't perfect.
And the thing about it, too, is that it's not just a bad week. It hasn't just been a bad 2 weeks. You mentioned it. 10-10-1 over the past 21 games is not just a rough patch. Like, 21 games is a long time. And the issues have been there for the vast majority of this stretch. So it's not as if, you know, we're amplifying these little things as the Rangers continue to win games. No. This is now a long period of time where the Rangers are playing 500 hockey and they're making just a lot of silly mistakes that they haven't made earlier on in the season when they kept destroying everybody. This is a strange team right now that is unconfident. They're making mistakes that they haven't made earlier on in the year. And I mean, right now there's really no signs of them like getting out of it. Cause again, there's been 21 games of essentially mediocre hockey from playing at the top of their game. They're playing so well. And then these past 21 games hit where they just one game, they look okay. And then the next game, okay, they get goalied, whatever. And then they come out of the gates and then they get scored on early. And then it's like a lot of the same problems that we've seen under Gallant and under Quinn are still there. And you have to wonder, you know, I'm sure Chris Drury sees it just like we do with a lot of these basic problems that just aren't being fixed. At a certain point, it's like the coach isn't going to be able to do anything. It's up to the players to figure it out. And I am interested to see what Chris Drury has up his sleeve, because he doesn't have a lot of cap space unless he makes some kind of really, you know, some kind of 5D chess move with contracts and you know, third parties involved and all these things. This is the team, and this is the team that's had the same issues for years now. Okay, well, a new coach is great and he can implement the system and the team can actually practice for once, but other than that, the fundamental problems that certain players have had under other coaches are still going to be there. So it's now up to the management and it's now up to these individual players to fix their stuff. Cause this is like, there's no miracle, you know, move or massive big time trade that's going to just erase all of the issues the Rangers have. It's up to everybody individually to finally get in their heads. Hey, this film session that I'm a part of that, you know, I let this guy go because I wanted to deliver a big hit and they scored on me. And maybe I shouldn't do that anymore. It's up to guys individually to recognize the mistakes that they're making and stop doing it. Cause it's been years now. And if they don't, well, then it's another season down the drain. They have to figure it out.
Another topic I wanted to address today, something I genuinely think is interesting. I think people didn't take it seriously all those years and the last couple of years when we said the Rangers have great goaltending, because the Rangers have mortal goaltending for the first time in quite a long time. And look what kind of state the team is in. I know a lot of people said, oh, we took Henrik Lundqvist for granted. We took Igor for Shesterkin for granted. Yes, we did. We weren't just saying that. That wasn't just hyperbole to get interactions on Twitter. The Rangers genuinely have had one of the 5-10 best goalies ever, succeeded by a guy who put together one of the best goaltending seasons of the last 20 years. The Rangers right now are what every other organization has had to deal with at some point in time over the last 10 years. When you build your team around the idea that we're going to have elite goaltending and then the elite goaltending doesn't manifest, no shit, the team is going to have a hard time. So I think, yes, we all are in agreement that the goaltending has been bad. Not just meh, it has been actively bad over the last few weeks. But I can test you this, Andrew. I have a lot more confidence in Igor Shesterkin turning back into what he's been the last 3 years than I do of Mika Zibanejad ever driving play at 5-on-5 again. If we're talking about what's plausible, what's likely, how do we turn this around?
Yeah.
It's getting Shesterkin into a rhythm and getting over whatever is holding him back. And right now, we know he's very hard on himself. And he knows he's not playing well, and he knows the team is struggling. So whether that's getting Quick in here two of the three games, we know that it's a back-to-back Friday, Saturday, so I imagine Quick will get one of those. But I hope Shesterkin doesn't look at a hockey puck the week of the All-Star break. I hope he goes wherever warm place
he can't, because he's going to be there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Fuck.
He's going to be at the All-Star game.
That's not great, and part of why I understand why these guys don't want to go. Because Shesterkin genuinely, A, doesn't deserve to be an All-Star, and B, he would be a lot better served by a weekend off than having to be in the skills contest and then play basically, I don't want to say like, I don't even know what I would describe the 3-on-3 played in the All-Star game as, because that's like alumni pace where like people are just gliding, the passes aren't crisp, but like, in the back of my mind, they need to come up with a pseudo injury and not have him go, because he genuinely needs time to reset, because if he doesn't start playing better, it doesn't matter what anyone else does, because they have built this team around the idea that he's going to be one of the best goalies in the league, and he hasn't been that this year.
Think of it this way. Shesterkin has won the Vezina for being the best goalie on the planet, right? Mika Zibanejad has never won any award for being the best anything in the NHL. So therefore, even though Shesterkin isn't playing well at this, you don't need a rocket scientist to tell you that. He'll tell you that himself. He hasn't been playing well. I have a lot more confidence in Igor figuring himself out and becoming the all-world goaltender that we've seen out of him than I will ever have in Zibanejad somehow figuring out, oh yeah, he's really good at this hockey thing and turning it up at 5-on-5. Because we've been yelling about it for years now. With Zibanejad. With Shesterkin, we've been talking about it for what, 2 weeks? Like, Zibanejad has been an ongoing issue for multiple seasons now. Shesterkin's having a rough month. Like, I don't think it's close. I have way more faith in Shesterkin figuring it out than I do Zibanejad all of a sudden remembering that he's really good at hockey and figuring out, oh yeah, I can do this at 5-on-5 too. I could just skate by these people and I could just dig by these people because I'm Mika Zibanejad. I don't, at this point, because he hasn't done it for so long, I don't think he'll ever do it again.
So I should caveat and I should add on to that. This is not to say Mika Zibanejad is not good at hockey. Yeah. This is to say that if the Rangers want to get to where they say they want to get to, he needs to be better. It's that simple. The Rangers think they're a Stanley Cup contender. The general manager has operated the past 2 years like they are a Stanley Cup contender. They fired the coach last year because going out in the first round was unacceptable. That means we need more than what we've had. Because what have the Rangers had? First round exit, conference final exit. Before that, they hadn't made the playoffs in 3 seasons. We're not counting the bubble playoffs because that was also a disaster. If you want to include that too, sure. They've been eliminated in 3 games, 7 games, and then got to a conference final. If they want to get that cup, if they want to get where they say they want to get to, that means we need to do stuff we haven't done before. That means we need more from the guys who are here. Help will come eventually, whether that's in the form of Filip Hedl or somebody from outside the organization at the trade deadline. There will be reinforcements. But if they try and just tread water until the All-Star break or whenever Hedl comes back, they're going to do exactly what they did last year, where they're going to think as soon as the help gets here, we can turn it on and we can figure it out. The progress needs to be made over the next month so that by the time Heedle or the trade deadline acquisition, whoever they may be, comes in, they are already going at a decent rate. And then it's a matter of just integrating that one player as opposed to trying to get the whole team going, because that's what happened last year. And repeating the same mistake would be infuriating.
The worst case scenario is them being really mad at themselves for thinking that they could just flip the switch on last season. They got dumpstered by New Jersey, and then they get in here mad that, oh, you know, that shouldn't have happened to us. They play the first 2 months really well, and then they fall back to, oh yeah, we can just figure it out. I mean, look, we've played like this, you know, earlier on in the season. There's nothing stopping us from doing it again in the playoffs. Oh, it's fine. Like, you can't think that way. You just thought that way last season. You waited around for Patrick Kane. You did all of those cap shenanigans, and then you got dumpstered because you waited for a switch to be flipped that never got flipped. You can't be mad about how that ended and then do the exact same thing. There's no way. There's no shot that the Rangers are going to be allowed to do that again. And if that does happen again, I'd be very interested to see what management does, because if that happens again, I think there's going to be a lot of changes.
Well, I can't even say that because a lot of these guys have full or limited no moves. What are you going to do? So hypothetically, they go out in the first round again. What's the natural recourse? What? Okay, you trade Trouba. Terrific. You trade good. You get Gaudreau out of here. That's $11 million. And the cap goes up $10 million. So you got like $15 to $20 million to play with. Okay. Panarin, Zibanejad, and Trocheck are all a year older. You have the emotional and tangible impacts of taking away guys that, even if they aren't particularly good at hockey, the other guys on the team like. And will taking those guys away will have a negative impact. That's the real conundrum. They pushed a lot of chips in on a group that I won't say is limited, because frankly, they've held themselves back more than anything. Not that they have put a lot of chips in on a group that is good, not great, has the ability to be great, and for whatever reason, can't get over that mental hurdle of going from good to great. We saw stretches of great hockey 2 months ago from this group, genuinely effective all three phases of the game. Even if the goaltending wasn't going great, it was still 905, 910. You know, it was league average. They haven't had league average goaltending in a month and a half. The 5-on-5 offense has entirely dried up. If they don't score on the power play, they basically don't win. I mean, I know that's not really rocket science, and power plays are up. So generally speaking, when we're talking about what a successful team looks like, you're going to have more opportunities to score. And when you're as talented as the Rangers are, you have the chance to score. But it feels like they need to get to this All-Star break, and they need a hard reset. They really need to come back from that All-Star break, not next week, the week after that, with a real refreshed sense of, okay, we've got 20-something games to go here. Help's coming, but we can't just wait for that help. It is on us to turn things around.
We talked about this last season. We talked about during the offseason. You cannot rely on the referees to win you hockey games. That's what the Rangers have done before, where, oh, well, we could just survive at 5-on-5, wait for our power plays, and we'll just win the game. That means that you are relying on 85% of the game to be even at best. And you're relying on outside forces to help you win hockey games, as opposed to taking 85% of the game seriously and trying to win during that period of game time. Instead, you are waiting on the other team to make a mistake. That's one. Two, for referees to catch it, because sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, as we all know. And three, you got to convert those chances. So it's like the Rangers right now are like, okay, most of the game, as long as they don't score, it's fine. What happens? Nothing matters. We need to rely on these three things in order for us to win the game, as opposed to taking the rest of the game more seriously. They've done that last season. They're doing it again now. And it just doesn't fundamentally. That's just not how you play the correct way of hockey. Like, it's just not, you have to rely on yourself to win the game. You can't rely on others to make mistakes and to get the power plays and to cash in on them. You can't do that effectively, especially in the playoffs, where referees hate calling penalties. You have to do something tangibly at 5-on-5 to win games in the playoffs. And they didn't work for them last season with, for the Rangers to hold on to their power play strat. And they've been doing the last few weeks here again. And, you know, if you do the same thing over and over again, expect different results, Nick. You know how that goes.
One last thing I wanted to talk about on today's episode. I think it's fascinating the difference between the Devils and the Islanders and how they've handled their slow starts, because Lou is operating purely from a sense of survival where, like, he wants to keep his job. Whereas because things in New Jersey are relatively stable, they've done a good job building that team. The general manager hasn't gone for the break in case of emergency, even though I would argue the Devils would have been a little more justified in doing so because their roster is significantly better than the Islanders. And that's, the Islanders are decent. They're better than their record. Their talent is better than their record. But the Devils refusing to address the elephant in the room, I don't want to say it's hilarious, because, you know, the Rangers did also employ Lindy Ruff for 3 seasons for God knows why. But at some point, it also ties back to the Rangers, because the general managers who operate their bench as an extension of job protection, they're generally more aggressive than the ones who are entrenched, because the ones who are entrenched, they feel like they're bulletproof. And because of the season the Devils had and the connotations of that organization making the playoffs for the first time in a decade last year, it feels like they're more content to just ride it out, even though I would argue it would have benefited them a lot more than the Islanders making a coaching change.
Yeah, I mean, and first of all, also the coaching change was interesting to say the least. Like, you don't, the Islanders didn't go for Berube. They didn't go for Dean Evason. They didn't go for Gerard Gallant. They went for Patrick Waugh, a guy who last coached in the league a few years ago in Colorado.
2016. It's been a while.
And he didn't go well over there. And
he won Coach of the Year. He had one good run there.
Yeah, but it didn't end well. That's for sure. Yeah. But also, I mean, to what I understand, he went to juniors. He coached there, and he did a really good job in junior. I don't know, but
yes. They won the Memorial Cup last year. He did a really good job.
Yeah, he did a good job. But how that will translate back into the NHL level, we'll wait and see. They did win their first game, and yeah, I mean, Lane wasn't going to win with that group. Like, that's just, if ask any Islanders fan, ask anybody that watches their games, and you could very quickly tell that Lane just didn't have it with that group. And maybe Patrick Waugh will, you know, there's clips of him yelling at practice, and he's, you know, he's a very vocal guy. That's somebody that I guess the Islanders needed. So maybe they'll go in that direction. But it's interesting that Lou chose him as opposed to other potential candidates in around the league right now that are free agents. And for the Devils, yeah, I mean, we knew this when they hired him. Lindy Ruff he's not going to win you the Stanley Cup. He's just not. And teams believe in him because he's been around since, you know, VCRs were new. I understand that. But like, at a certain point, if things aren't working with this guy, you have to, and I, to a certain extent, it's a lot of it's been the goaltending. Devils couldn't buy a save for some of their losses, and Lindy Ruff isn't going to do anything about that. Like, Lindy could coach an immaculate game, but if your goaltender can't stop the puck, then there's nothing he can do about it. So a little bit of the Devils struggles, I will say, and that's probably the thing that has saved Lindy Ruff so far, is, yeah, you can point to coaching issues and mistakes, but he's not the one in the crease stopping pucks. And the Devils haven't been very successful in having goaltenders that are stopping pucks here this season. Like, it's been a struggle bus and a half for them to find themselves a goaltender that is able to do that right now. So I think that's kind of been the biggest thing saving Lindy Ruff so far. The playoff run last season aside, if they had the same kind of record with an actual competent goaltender, then maybe I feel like they would have had they would have probably been more quick. Maybe they would have already made the change. But because Lindy Ruff hasn't been great, but the goaltending has been a disaster fire, I think that's been the biggest problem for them. At least maybe in time for Cheryl Dyes than Lindy Ruff.
Yeah, that's a good caveat. That's definitely something to consider. I have a lot of Devils fans friends, and the handling of Alexander Holtz over the last 2 weeks has kind of been like, I don't want to say that's the straw that broke the camel's back, but that's a really easy identifiable rallying point. And God bless the guy from the Star Ledger who actually asked real questions. We could use more people in hockey media who ask actual questions in the post game, other than how did you feel about that game or what were you thinking about that game? God bless Ryan Novo actually doing his job. Keep fighting the good fight.
Also, Corey Perry got signed at Edmonton and all the insiders were like, we don't want to talk about what happened. It's like, dog, it's kind of your whole job to figure out what happened.
I saw a transcript of what Friedman said of, it was really important that Corey Perry signed somewhere where there wouldn't be a lot of noise. My brother in Christ, you run the biggest hockey podcast in hockey media.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, that's not their job. Their job is to, you know, the GM scratch their back and they scratch theirs. Like, that's all it is. That's all insiders do. And I tweeted this out the other day when Patrick Waugh got hired. Team graphic designers know more than the insiders. I promise you they do, because the Islanders had that graphic ready. Like that, like those kind of things, they take a minute to make, because it's not just you quickly put something together and then you instantly put it up. No, you got to make it.
You got to go through a few layers of approval.
You got to go through approval process. You got to double check the you know, there's no typos that you don't tweet it prematurely. You got to there's a lot of hurdles that you have to clear in order to get a graphic approved and up on Twitter. The graphic designer for every team knows more than your favorite insider. I promise you.
They're definitely more plugged in than our favorite insiders. Our favorite insiders, they only get news when they check their phone. They're not exactly doing what's that expression? Shoe leather journalism. They're not exactly working the phones hard. They wait for a call. It's frustrating at times. It's going to get worse over the next month as the deadline talks ramp up and the journalists who do actual journalism sit in silence because they don't have anything to report. And the insiders do nothing but speculate for a month because they have to fill copy and sell advertising space.
My favorite people, my favorite insider, and everyone knows who this is.
Emojis.
I don't have to say their name. The one that posts pictures of players with the eye emoji and then just posts it. Dog. Either say what you know or don't fish for attention. Those fishing for interactions tweets drive me up a wall. They aggravate me to no end. You're an insider. What are you doing? Like, you don't have to tweet these nonsense tweets for retweets and likes. Like, people follow, people respect you, people will interact with whatever you post. You don't, like, dude, either say something or say nothing. These baity fishing pole tweets, I wish insiders would stop doing them. They drive me crazy.
You know how bad things have gotten for the Devils? They just tweeted a Chico Resch feature video from their main account because they're desperately trying anybody to not talk about the actual hockey on the team right now. So that's where the Devils are at. So at the very least, that's one thing. And to tie it back to the Rangers so we can wrap up, thank God nobody else in the division is playing well. The Rangers would have been fucked a while ago. Like, the Flyers being second, that's the greatest thing to happen to the Rangers this season. The Devils all being injured, the Islanders having an awful coach, the Penguins being 100 years old. Thank God the Metro isn't good. Otherwise, the Rangers would have been screwed a while ago. That's the only reason the Rangers are still in first place, because the rest of the division isn't good.
When you go 10-10-1 over your last 21 games and you're still riding the coattails off of your hot start to the season because everybody else is that bad. Yeah. Like, thankfully every other team is just as bad, because the Rangers are not doing themselves any favors over the past 21 games to cement themselves as a cup contender.
No, the Rangers have very much so fallen back into the, I expect them to be a first or second round exit based on the last month. There's plenty of time to turn that around. We don't know what the deadline's going to look like, when Hedl's going to come back. But right now, these are all the same issues they had last season. And the only difference is the backup goalies maybe a little bit better and Nick Bonino wins faceoffs. That's really the only difference between this team and last year's team. I mean, the power play is a smidge better if you wanted to argue, but we're talking about very granular differences.
I it, the thought process can't be we're going to flip the switch. Like,
nope.
They had it last year and it backfired tremendously. They came into this season being mad that they lulled themselves into that thought process, and now they're back in that thought process.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem right now is, okay, well then why were you mad about it earlier if now you're just back to where you were? You said, oh, never again. Let me tell you something. It's happening again.
The last note I will end on, and we can wrap on this. This team has talent. It refuses to play up to its talent. And that's why we get mad. It's not like a disappointed. It is genuinely, you are supremely talented. Especially in the cases of guys like Kreider and Zibanejad, where you see the flashes of genuine greatness. You can even throw Miller in here too. And then it just looks like they don't know what they're doing. It is on these guys. And we were tepid about Laviolette, and we were both of the opinion it didn't really matter who the coach was, because these guys are who they are at this point. You're not going to be able to change who they are as players. I am waiting for somebody other than the 24-year-old Will Cooley to step up and realize, hey, this is not okay. I am waiting for somebody else on this team to make a tangible hockey play to say the way we have played the last few weeks is unacceptable. I am changing things around here.
By the way, the Oilers have won 13 in a row with Chris Knobloch. Yeah. I'm throwing that out there.
I don't think the coach matters that much, in all honesty. I think anybody would be doing better with the Oilers just because they're actually getting saves now. Sure. Skinner's fixed, and that's helped. He's not great, but he's better than 880. They've turned it around immensely. They will be interesting, but I still think at the end of the day, you know what? Let's not dwell on the Oilers. Let's get out of here. I want to eat and get back to work. All right. That'll do it for this week's episode of the Liberty Blue Podcast. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcasts, over on YouTube as well, live every Monday, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube, 6 p.m. Eastern. We will see you guys next week.
Later.